This is part 8 of Your Life is Their Toy, Merchants in Medicine, by Emanuel Josephson, M.D., from 1948. False and dangerous advice. The volume is replete with advice that is sometimes absurdly wrong and is sometimes dangerously false. Skimming through the volume, a few of the false passages were culled for citation. On page 718, the quote-unquote authorities state, quote, "Sometimes the pain of earache may be relieved in the early stages by dropping into the ear some warm eardrops, usually composed of glycerin with a small percent of phenol," unquote. Few intelligent physicians fail to realize how fruitless and dangerous is the use of these drops in the ear. They cause a congestion of the eardrum, which may serve to aggregate the inflammation present. If there is no inflammation present at the start, these drops may induce inflammation and reduce the resistance of the tissues. The congestion caused by the drops serves to deceive and confuse the physician regarding the status of the ear, and therefore often results in needless surgery. Any competent physician knows enough to condemn the practice recommended to the public by these merchant, quote-unquote, authorities. On the same page, Fishbein and his, quote-unquote, authorities cast to the swine public a gem of wisdom. They recommend incision of the eardrum for relief of mastoiditis. Persons who know anything about the subject realize that by the time relief is sought for mastoiditis, the eardrum generally has been incised or destroyed, that incision of the eardrum merely drains the middle ear and does not suffice to drain the mastoid abscess. But medical, quote-unquote, authorities need not know the elements of medicine. Politics alone serves to carve out career and reputation. On page 313, Fishbein sings the praises of oily nose drops with unparalleled wisdom. Quote, "For years, camphor menthol solutions and preparations of oil, camphor, menthol, and eucalyptol have been used to give relief in nasal irritation. The actual worth of such preparations in curing the cold is doubtful. Their value in securing comfort is considerable," unquote. One of the most significant, quote-unquote, comforts of such oily preparations, especially in infants, has been widely publicized by the Health Commissioner of New York City, Dr. John L. Rice, who pretends to be no authority on the diseases of the nose. He warned the public of the fact that every practitioner knows that such mineral oil preparations may cause lung abscesses and serious disease. But Morris Fishbein, eminent specialist in disease of men, women, and children, in diseases of eye and toes, ears and anus, mind and bladder, in his profound wisdom, does not sanction such consequences of, quote, "comforting oily nose drops," unquote. Fishbein entertains a high opinion of things, quote unquote, "oily," and our infants will have to regard the lung abscesses given them on his advice as, quote-unquote, comforts. There is no end of gems of medical, quote-unquote, wisdom and misinformation in the volume. Turning to page 743, one finds, in a disquisition on syphilis, the following epigram, quote, "One of the difficult things about syphilis is that to cure it often requires a long time, 2 years or more," unquote. Professor Henry H. Hazen truthfully and optimistically states with regard to quote-unquote cures in syphilis, quote, "The criteria of cure are most unsatisfactory. Not until more cases have been followed for years shall we know exactly what has been accomplished. Relapses have been reported after the patient has been clinically and serologically negative for 8 or 10 years," unquote. The consensus of those who know and tell the truth is that there does not yet exist any method of quote-unquote cure, or even a reliable criterion for the judgment of quote-unquote cures in syphilis. On the functions of the AMA. Fishbein's, quote, "modern home medical advisor," unquote, serves as a perfect illustration of the true function of the American Medical Association and of its rackets, including its publicity racket. It is a profitable enterprise for its boss's ring and a business getter for their henchmen. Medicine's politically designated, quote-unquote, authorities. This function of the American Medical Association and its monopolistic and coercive nature is clearly stated in the opening chapters of this invaluable, quote-unquote, advisor. It states, quote, "Before a physician may join the AMA, he must be a member of the county and state medical societies, and he must be a member of all these societies before he may join any recognized specialty societies," unquote. Quote, "Membership in a medical society is not an absolute guarantee of honesty or of good faith of a physician," unquote, but, quote, "a patient is much better off with a doctor who belongs to a recognized medical society," unquote. By this time, the reader has learned enough to appreciate the advantages of keeping out of the hands of the nitwits who bow to the racketeering of medical organization. Also, that a good use for the modern home medical advisor is building fires or baser employ. Announcing Dr. Morris Fishbein's employment by it as a syndicated writer, King Features Syndicate Incorporated stated in a full-page advertisement in Editor and Publisher of March 23, 1940, quote, "As an authority on medicine, Dr. Fishbein's name is synonymous with the sterling stamp on a piece of silver," unquote. Chapter 5. Censorship of the Press. The American Medical Association and Organized Social Service, with the New York Academy of Medicine and other allies, exert an absolute censorship over the publication in lay and popular channels of all news which affects their interest. Protestations of news syndicates, newspapers, and magazines to the American Medical Association of their complete submissiveness to its censorship are regularly published in the Journal of the AMA. A typical one, from the United Press, received comment in the editorial columns of the Journal of January 1940. Current comment. Only those closely associated with modern trends in publication are familiar with the vast improvement that has been taking place relative to the publication of news of scientific advances. A bulletin recently issued by the United Press to its bureau managers and division managers is worthy of quotation. It reads, "It seems advisable to restate our traditional policy concerning handling of stories of cures or other medical developments. This policy, which dates back more than 20 years, is never to call anything a cure or in fact give any publicity to any remedy of any description without a thorough investigation. This rule is now being strengthened by the following. Under no circumstances put any story on the least wire about a remedy. If the bureau manager is convinced that the story has merit, he should overhead it to New York for investigation and consider there. Thus, under the guise of, quote-unquote, protecting the public, a complete censorship of scientific and medical news is given by the UP to the New York medical clique. The New York newspapers, especially the Times, likewise submits to censorship at the hands of this group, as do many other newspapers and magazines. Quote unquote, Doc Simmons muzzled medical profession. Such control of the lay press of a character as thorough as that exercised over the medical press was absolutely essential for the success of the rackets founded by quote unquote Doc Simmons. Power of censorship over the reader columns ensures control of the announcement of medical discoveries and other creditable news. It enables the theft of valuable ideas and discoveries, and also the making and breaking of medical reputations. Thus, it forces the medical profession into tribute and allegiance. The control of the advertising columns of the press spells power of life and death over the medical and drug industries and the financial success of the AMA, quote, testimonial racket, unquote. The story of the establishment of this censorship is one of blunder, stupidity, intrigue, and politics that is characteristic of the entire history of the AMA. By their rule of ethics that enjoined doctors from speaking for publication for the lay press, Simmons and his clique made it difficult for the press to obtain information on medical topics except from quacks, sub rosa channels, or from influential medical politicians. The code made the work of editors and reporters extremely difficult and created high antagonism among them against the medical profession. Social service gained medical news censorship. Advantage was taken of the arrogant stupidity of the medical bosses by organized social service to gain a part in the control and censorship of medical news, which they still retain and which has served them well in securing unlimited support for their questionable activities. In cahoots with the Metropolitan Life Insurance Company, the New York Tuberculosis and Health Association set up the Medical Information Bureau under the direction of Dr. Iago Galdston. They succeeded in imposing this censorship and business-building agency on the New York Academy of Medicine and on the New York County Medical Society. Fishbein discovered profits in popular medicine. In the meantime, Dr. Morris Fishbein, who had become boss of the AMA and editor of its journal, undertook to combat the host of enemies and rivals of the medical fraternity in books addressed to laymen on quacks and fads. It is interesting to note that none of the fads and quackery of the AMA or its bosses was exposed in these books. This started Fishbein and the association in the field of popular publication. The magazine Hygieia followed. Eventually, as has been related, Fishbein developed a very profitable business as a privileged medical columnist and lay magazine contributor who was protected in his somewhat monopolistic activities by quote-unquote medical ethics. Lately, Fishbein has also, quote, gone into the movies, unquote, and become editor and censor of motion pictures. The development of medical propaganda in the movies is illustrated by such movies as the Dr. Kildare series and the Magic Bullet. The attainment of complete censorship and control of medical news was a bit complicated by personal ambition of Morris Fishbein. Only such loyal AMA henchmen as Dr. Irving S. Cutter of the Daily News were safe from them. The situation was further complicated by the competitive censorship of the Medical Information Bureau. Quality of science reporting was high. Between 1925 and 1935, science and medical reporting had reached a high state of development. Most of the news syndicates and some newspapers and magazines had learned to appreciate the news value of science. Science editors were then alert newspapermen who realized that their value to the public and to their employers depended on the dissemination of fresh news of medical and scientific discovery without bias, and they made a good job of it. Their columns were often the first to apprise scientists and physicians of advances in their respective fields. Important and life-saving medical discoveries were often announced by them years before any mention in the politically dominated journals of the AMA. In some cases, important discoveries were announced in the newspapers that, for personal and political reasons, were suppressed entirely in the AMA and other medical journals. Readers formed the habit of buying several publications in order to read the diverse reports on scientific topics. Medical monopolies combat quote-unquote menace. Freedom of the lay press in medical matters was a grave menace to the medical and social service rackets. It threatened their monopolistic plots and plans and endangered their illicit enterprises. It was essential for them that the freedom of the press in matters pertaining to medicine should be suppressed. For this purpose, letter-writing lobbies of henchmen and quote-unquote authorities were maintained, which bombarded the editors and proprietors of newspapers and magazines with letters lauding the news that the group desired published and condemning the news that they wished suppressed. Always it was represented by the letter writers that their sole interest was to protect the public who were so dear to them. Many of the letters were forged in the names of pretended patients that represented that they had suffered injury and abuse at the hands of the physician whose work the lobby sought to suppress. These letter lobbies made the editors quite fearful of their jobs. The medical organizations also sought to dictate what should be published by placing restrictions and obstructions in the way of the editors in securing medical news. In self-defense, the National Association of Science Writers was formed. Organized Medicine woos NASW. Then began a process of wooing of the press by the AMA and the New York Academy of Medicine cliques. Fishbein and Galston sought and obtained jobs as syndicated columnists and editors, the former on the NEA, serving the Scripps Howard papers, and the latter on the Associated Press. This made them, in effect, censors of medical news issued by these syndicates. In the meantime, both the social service and medical cliques began to wine, dine, adulate, decorate, and bestow medals on the science writers and their association. The New York Academy of Medicine, the New York County Medical Society, the American Society for the Control of Cancer, the American Medical Association, the American College of Surgeons, the American Association for the Advancement of Science, and many others, wooed with tinsel and with flesh and honey pots. AMA trustees, feet science editors. On October 30th, 1937, the trustees of the American Medical Association played host to the National Association of Science Writers. Quote, in a special conference at which representatives of organized medicine in America, medical columnists and science reporters exchanged news on ways and means to keep the public informed of progress in medical science, unquote. The hosts took great pains to explain that their sole concern, forsooth, was the protection of public welfare. For this purpose, the guests were asked to accept censorship and muzzling by the hosts. The science writers replied with a cynicism bred of many years of contact with corrupt, dishonest, and racketeering representatives of organized medicine and social service. William Lawrence of the New York Times pointed out the saving of human lives which resulted from the dissemination of news of medical discoveries through the press far earlier and more rapidly than the AMA chose to permit in its own publications. He might have pointed out to his hosts that the AMA had been responsible for delaying for many years the dissemination of information regarding the life-saving properties of sulfanilamide, and also for the, quote, endangering of human lives and causing avoidable deaths, unquote, maiming and misery, as in the case of dinotrophenol. Medical bosses profit from suppression of medical news. He might have pointed out that these acts against the health and lives of the public are generally deliberately perpetrated for motives of profit. Retarding their dissemination permits medical bosses to selectively profit from medical discoveries by making available to themselves alone information and drugs which are withheld from the profession at large. In this manner, they are enabled to turn new discoveries into private, secret remedies of the type they pretend to condemn, and to convert them to the enhancement of their reputations and fortunes. Also, the suppression or delay of publication of medical discoveries serves to protect the reputations of medical bosses and politicians, so-called quote-unquote authorities, and to uphold their pretense of omniscience. Quite frequently, it enables the theft of credit for medical discoveries. Increasingly, it is becoming the vogue now for officers and laymen executives of philanthropies and organized social service to steal the credit for medical discoveries made by others. And that concludes part 8 of Your Life is Their Toy, Merchants in Medicine, by Emmanuel Josephson, M.D., from 1948.